As we watch the millennial generation interact with one another and the world, it's easy to get the impression that all they want to do is push buttons and look at screens. But have we ever thought that pushing buttons and looking at screens was just this generation's way of pursuing what all generations have pursued from the beginning of time? Significance, belonging, love, purpose, identity, relationships, and answers to the deeper questions of life. They're all a lot more important to this generation than one might think. Parenting insights into today's young people. That's our topic today on License to Parent. Well, hello once again, and welcome to the License to Parent broadcast, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long residential program for teens in crisis and their families. Our host is the founder and director of Shepherd's Hill, Trace Embry, and I'm Rich Rosel. And Trace, as you well know, we often talk here on License to Parent about, well, some of the apathy, some of the apparent disinterest of today's teenagers in going much beyond the next level of a video game or checking their social media pages. But for many others, and probably more than we might realize ourselves, there is actually a hunger to delve into some of these deeper issues of life.
Yeah, well, Rich, it's been my experience that even many of the kids who at first glance seem to have no interest in life beyond partying, pornography, social media, video games, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, even those kids will engage in a deeper conversation if the person they're talking with actually has some substantive answers for them. I think for too long, the church has been using volunteer help who've agreed to teach Sunday school out of guilt or duty, you know, glancing over a cheesy prepackaged microwave lesson the night before or maybe even the morning of the actual Sunday school class.
Yeah.
But today's kids, though not always very wise, are very informed and discerning, and they see through superficiality and disingenuousness, especially in religious circles. And interestingly, they also see through the superficiality and disingenuousness on the internet and social media. But because these mediums gratify their flesh, often at the expense of their spirit, they're willing to play the game. And this is why I said they're discerning, but not wise. But this generation is actually trying to find something worth latching on to. And sadly, most adults aren't giving them anything worth reaching for. You know, Lil Wayne, Miley Cyrus, Jay-Z, Macklemore, and the like, these guys are too often filling the void in the lives of our young kids that we in the church ought to be filling.
That's absolutely right. Well, one of the reasons that we do this program is to try to equip parents to be able to fill those voids, to be able to give proper guidance and structure to their kids, and that's why we've invited today's guest on. His name is John Wesolowski. He currently works for AXIS, which is a Christian ministry that helps students and families develop a lifelong faith, not just a brief time span faith, but one that's going to be sustained. John is passionate about helping people wrestle through the big questions, and he co-writes the Culture Insider, which is a weekly list of the most important things to understand in our culture. He studied philosophy at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs and is an alumnus of the Impact 360 Institute. And speaking of Colorado, we understand he came from the great state of Florida, but he now lives in downtown Colorado Springs with his wife, Megan, and his son, Finley.
John, welcome to the License to Parent broadcast.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. Really excited about this conversation.
Well, tell us a little bit about AXIS. How specifically is AXIS impacting teens and parents, the church, our culture at large?
Yeah, you know, AXIS was started around 7 years ago. It was related to a group called Summit Ministries. Mm-hmm. And it started when we saw a lot of the same things Shepherd Hill saw, that students were hungry for meat, for digging into deeper ideas that are happening around them and shaping them.
Sure.
And so AXIS goes to high schools and to universities, and we discuss these ideas. So we'll play a song, and instead of saying, hey, is this a good song, bad song, we say, what are the ideas that are portrayed in the song? And what is the consequence of those ideas being lived out? So that's good. That's a little bit of what AXIS does and why we started. We're really passionate about teens, and we really believe in their ability to think and act in a mature way when it comes to translating our culture and understanding big ideas.
Awesome. I have a quick question just about the music that you were describing when you say we play music and, you know, ask these questions. Do you play a mixture of both secular and Christian music, or do you just stick with secular, or how does that work? My reason for asking, I've noticed that a lot of times as parents, we often let our guard down when the label Christian is on something.
Right.
And I could see there being a lot of merit in incorporating both, you know, what we might call the secular and the sacred. How does Axis approach that?
Yeah, so the first thing is we play a majority of what's the most popular in our culture right now.
Like gotcha.
Top 40, we do a lot of that. But you're exactly right. In fact, we have a classroom talk. What in the world does the term quote-unquote Christian music actually mean? And we go after radio stations that say things like safe for the whole family, because we think that those taglines, safe for the whole family, a lot of times what that is ended up saying is you can turn off your mind. You don't have to worry about this.
Right.
And so we do like to highlight when Christian music proposes dangerous ideas.
Yeah.
And when commercials on Christian radio stations
right.
might propose dangerous ideas. And what's funny is if you watch the Video Music Awards for MTV, which I have to watch for my job, mm-hmm. strangely enough, they bleep out the cuss words.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't say that that's safe to watch because there's so much sexuality.
Right.
There's so much drugs. There are so many bad philosophies. But our society has like this sort of blank standard for, hey, if we bleep out the F word, we're fine. And I think Christians have the same thing, is that, you know, as long as we're talking about Jesus, there's no bad idea.
Right.
I've had this conversation with some of my kids over the years when they might, you know, want to listen to a hip-hop song or, well, I guess it's quite often rap lyrics. You can hear the, we'll call it the sanitized version on the radio, but it's like every third word is missing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said, you know, if a station or a record producer has to go to that much trouble to pull out that many words, is it really worth listening to? And so I just applaud what you guys are doing with music, really teaching true discernment.
Sure. That's great. And my question is, why aren't more churches doing this in-house?
You know, I'm baffled by that as well. Is what's the deal? Why isn't this seen as a bigger issue? But you know what? We actually developed our first conference just 2 years ago aimed specifically for churches rather than schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've seen a whole slew of churches that want this, that want to talk about this. And so that presentation actually has been incredibly popular. But it's just something you don't hear in the,
right.
in the Christian media, I guess, as much. It's more like underground, this yearning for something more for their students.
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of the pastoral staff are equipped to deal with some of these things. They know scripture, but I don't know that they know how to apply it to today's culture. You know, the sons of Issachar, understanding their times, knowing what to do. I think we need to heed that idea. But, you know, while many Jewish kids are still studying the Old Testament in the original language every day at 3 o'clock, many Christian churches have just done away with Wednesday night services altogether, even Sunday night services. Do you think that we're at a place in history and as a culture where the kind of teaching that Axis offers, apologetics and the like, would be a good, maybe even necessary reason for churches to reopen their doors for Wednesday night and Sunday night teaching just for this type of thing?
Yeah. In fact, one of the things that I think is so important for understanding the gospel is overlooked, but it's shown in Acts chapter 17, and it's this term cultural exegesis. And as Christians, we understand the importance of exegeting a passage of Scripture. We look at a verse and we say, hey, what's the context? What's going on around this? To try to make sense of that verse.
Sure.
And we look at the original language. But Paul, in Acts chapter 17, he's at the Areopagus, and he starts quoting local Athenian poets and Epicureans, and he starts quoting things they know, and then he ties it into the gospel.
Right.
And so that quote, the God in whom we live and move and have our being, that is a total secular cultural statement that he takes, and then he brings it and he says, hey, you have this shrine to the unknown God. Let me tell you about this God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so beautiful, and I think that's exactly what churches can start doing, is cultural exegesis.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, how do we understand this longing for anonymity in Acts? When students love apps like Yik Yak, where you can comment and have your name hidden, What is that saying about our students and what they want?
Mm-hmm.
When students are obsessed with live streaming, where their phones are not posting videos that they've edited or that they've looked through, but is literally posting the video as it's being filmed, things like Meerkat and Periscope, what is that saying about our students and their significance? And that's why I love the intro to this conversation, when it was saying, hey, maybe these students want what everybody else wants.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they just want love and significance. Maybe they want to understand their identity. And maybe these apps, maybe these technologies are telling us exactly what they're longing
sure.
for. And it speaks to a much deeper truth.
No doubt about it. Let me ask you something. How important is it for parents to get a better grip on all this as well? I think we focus on the kids, but I think we're at a point now. We get parents bringing their kids here who are almost... I could be their parent, and it's like they're not much older than the millennials themselves. And how important is it for the parents to get a better grip on this?
Yeah, there's two things that really stick out to me. The first thing is for parents to recognize their influence. So much in our culture is all about outsourcing parents to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that parents on a deep down level sometimes have really believed this. And there's this really great book talking about the church called Think Orange. And they talk about how a dedicated student spends about 40 hours with their youth pastor, but the average student spends about 3,200 hours with their parents.
Okay, now I don't want anybody to miss that. In the course of a given year, parents will have an average of 3,000 or more hours with their kids, whereas the church only has about 40 hours with our kids. So that really is a significant difference, yeah.
The influence of a parent is incalculable. It's so important. The second thing to realize is that they model the behavior. There's this New York Times post that showed a study that showed most students learn their technology habits from their parents.
That's right.
And I was actually listening to a podcast last night that was discussing how, you know, most students that are addicted to their phones have seen that same sort of addiction displayed in their parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a 2-year-old son, and it amazes me how fluent he is in technology, how he understands what to do when he grabs a phone. And I realize that's because you see me use a phone.
Yeah, we need to talk.
I was going to say, maybe we need to open up a whole new camp here at Shepherd's Hill just for parents.
I hear that almost daily. People come up to me, do you have a place for parents? We often speak of digital technology as being a hindrance to spiritual growth, but how can digital technology actually be used to better impact parents and their kids for the cause of Christ?
Yeah, one of the big questions at Access that we had to wrestle with is this question of what is technology actually for? Or what is technology at its base? And we heard from society, and we even heard from the church, that technology is neutral. And we looked back at the creation story, and we came up with an actually different answer. We actually think that technology is an extension of the cultural mandate, that technology itself is actually a good thing that God meant to be for good. However, it's cursed. And mm-hmm. so the same way that mankind was made very good but is cursed and capable of really terrible things, the same is true of technology. And C.S. Lewis talks about this in Mere Christianity, where he basically says, you know, the better a thing is, the worse it spoils. Mm-hmm. And I think that the terrible things we see coming out of technology is representative of how good it can be.
Yeah.
I think this radio show is a great example of it, that this is a technology. That
sure.
This is something that's informing and equipping people to live a deeper life. And I think that the internet is going to put this radio show in places that it would never be because you can't afford to have a transistor every square inch of the earth,
mm-hmm.
but the internet is on every square inch of the earth.
Well, I see digital technology as our sin nature on steroids.
And I just wanted to mention, by the way, we now are being piped into Australia.
Mm.
And that yeah. is through, I'll mention the station, His Word Online. Yeah, it's amazing that because of the ability to reach the world with technology, we're able now to reach the world with this program.
Yeah, we're trying to use it as a tool rather than a weapon.
Yeah, and that to me is the question you ask, is this technology driving me deeper into the life that God has called me to, or is it a distraction from that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to look at every single thing. Hey, let's look at YouTube. Let's look at Periscope. Let's look at Twitter. and ask this question. And so it has to be on an individual basis. So Access can't publish a list of things that you can and can't do that drives you deeper into life. You have to prepare the individual. The individual has to have that discernment to know, how can I use this as a tool for the kingdom of God?
Right.
Versus how is this just serving myself and distracting me from my ultimate calling?
Yeah, turning me into a deeper narcissist.
Our guest today is John Wesolowski. He's the director of team experience at AXIS, a Christian ministry that helps students and families develop a lifelong faith. You can find out more at axis.org, and we'll continue our conversation with John in just a moment. This is License to Parent.
The world of digital technology is always changing, and it's changing you if you're comfortable with technology or not. Your kids may take technology almost completely for granted and rarely notice its effects. On the other hand, you may adapt to technology more slowly, but are affected by the digital invasion just as much as your kids. In the book, The Digital Invasion, How Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationships, authors Dr. Archibald Hart and Sylvia Hart Fried uncover the ways digital technology is changing us from within, physically, mentally, and especially spiritually, and offers therapeutic and biblical strategies to become good stewards of our digital lives. The Digital Invasion also includes 10 pages featuring Trace Embry of Shepherd's Hill Academy. Find The Digital Invasion in the store at LicenseToParent.org. Proceeds support the Shepherd's Hill Academy Student Scholarship Fund.
Hi, this is Robbie Zacharias. It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and License to Parent. I remember talking to somebody in the entertainment world once who said their entire target audience was an 18-year-old, and typically an 18-year-old male. They said the influence they wield in a culture around with their friends is enormous. So a ministry like this, to rescue those who have been seduced along the way, I cannot say how important this is. And to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
With the generous gifts from people just like you, we're able to provide parents with practical insights to navigate the challenges families face in today's culture, as well as helping troubled teens in our year-long residential program. To learn more and to donate, visit LicenseToParent.org.
You're listening to License to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, with our host, Trace Embry. I'm Rich Rosel, and our guest today, once again, is John Wesolowski, who works with AXIS. We've been talking about this great ministry that really has as its core theme, its core idea, to try to develop lifelong faith, not just occasional faith, not just once in a blue moon when I was young faith, but faith that lasts a lifetime. Trace?
Well, John, in a day when kids are now born into and indoctrinated with a deep-rooted postmodern thought in a country that, you know, President Clinton was a postmodern thinker and a product of the hippie movement in the 1960s. What are some of the more significant questions today's kids are asking that parents and youth workers alike need to be prepared to answer?
That's a great thing to focus on, is to focus on the questions that our society is putting out rather than the answers. I love that. And one of the biggest questions is going to be identity and what it means to be human.
There you go.
In a recent interview with NPR, Carly Rae Jepsen, who is a pop star, they asked her, hey, what's some of your guilty pleasures? And she says, I don't have any guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
Because if I get pleasure from it, I don't think I should feel guilty about it. Mm. So they're asking this question of what is my identity? And society is giving them this answer, hey, your identity is whatever is what you do. You're a human doing, not a human being. And what is it that you should do? You should do what makes you happy. And so students are hungry for it, and Instagram as a technology, as an app, as a platform, is extremely popular because it's students attempting to answer this question, attempting to say, this is who I am,
yeah.
This collection of pictures, this collection of images about my life is what I want to display to you, is what I want to actually be. So the question of identity, I think, is one of the biggest questions.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, you get other questions like the question of gender and sexuality, and who am I as a male or a female? That's a huge branch off question, but that stems from identity.
Sure.
The next big question of purpose, of why am I here, I feel like that, you know, we used to see that as an equal question to identity, but I think that it's feeding out of our students' question of identity.
Right.
And our students are also looking for, quote unquote, what is authentic. That is what's popular and what's in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to ask is like, what is real? What is authentic?
All
so,
while they say, let's keep it real, knowing that nobody does. That's the interesting thing. That's the hypocrisy on their end that they don't see. They claim to want to keep it real, but, you know, social media alone gives evidence that no one is keeping it real.
This raises an interesting point, though, talking about keeping it real. In a postmodern world where reality or real or truth is relative,
mm-hmm.
how does one keep it real? If they are seeking truth and authenticity, what are they basing that on? And I guess the follow-up is, how can we help them base it on Scripture?
Yeah, what's funny is that is the hypocrisy of our age, is they say, you know, do what feels right, unless you're a pedophile, you know, you know, do what feels good unless you've been accused of assault.
So these random absolutes come in their relativistic, you know, overall worldview. They do bow to some absolutes.
I would add to that list, by the way, do what you want to do as long as you're not a Christian.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know,
yeah.
John, here's what I do with our kids. I basically ask them when they first get here, you know, what their worldview is and some of the stuff we're talking about right here. And they'll say, I should be able to do whatever I want to do when I want to do it. And I'll say, well, what's the logical outworking of 7 billion people on the planet thinking that way? And this is an honest generation, as you well know. They're not embarrassed about anything. Well, they'll say, war and chaos and death and destruction. Yeah, that's right. I said, well, here's my worldview. I believe I should love my neighbors myself and do unto others what I have them do unto me. What's the logical outworking of 7 billion people on the planet thinking that way? Well, peace, harmony, love. You know, which world do you want to live in? And I let them come to their own conclusions. You know, Chuck Colson did a thing where, and you're probably familiar with this, he asked a bunch of young people, I think 18 to 25, what's been your greatest moral dilemma in the last 5 years? And their answer was, they didn't have one. They didn't have a moral dilemma. And with postmodern thought, it's like, you're not going to have one. If you're the final arbiter of truth, you're not going to have one.
And that's just like the pop star that you were talking about who said, I have no guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, do you think today's Christian parent really knows just how much postmodernism has actually affected even their own worldview and parenting approach?
I would say that that they do not. In fact, I think most parents would have a hard time defining postmodernism or how it's different than modernism. And for me, the biggest, the boiling down postmodernism to its most basic mantra is probably only experience counts.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't rely on reason, that you can't rely on revelation, that there's three ways of knowing truth: revelation, reason, experience, and experience is king.
Yeah.
And it came out in a song by Pharrell, and this is what makes me think that parents struggle with this, is Pharrell Williams, huge star, his number one hit last year is called Happy. And the song is super positive. It's super positive. It's talking about not letting people get you down, to facing problems with a smile. But he has this line in the chorus that says, happiness is the truth. And his song, set next to, you know, Lil Wayne or Eminem, is clean. There's no cuss words.
Right.
The message is generally positive. But that line, happiness is the truth, I think is one of the most dangerous lines to come out of music last year.
Yeah.
Yet that song, because it doesn't cuss and doesn't refer to sex,
mm-hmm.
parents love to play it as a positive song.
Yeah.
And I even heard of some Christian radio stations is playing it occasionally as sort of their like, hey, here's something from our culture that we think is great.
Yeah, it's kind of like John Lennon's Imagine. It's a song that sounds beautiful, innocuous, but really when you start peeling back the onion, pretty dangerous stuff.
Yeah, and that line is just completely is completely a postmodern line.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness, not some. It's not even a modern philosophy. Modern philosophy might say the good of humanity is the truth,
yeah.
Or a Christian philosophy would say the glory of God is the truth. This says happiness is the truth, and it takes the narrative of the world and makes it an individual narrative.
Sure.
Rather than something that's bigger than oneself.
Well, there are a lot of happy drunks and drug addicts.
Yeah.
Pimps and prostitutes, yeah, yeah. And perverts.
John, we are about out of time here. At Shepherd's Hill, we often call digital technology the other parent. In your opinion, if you could wave the proverbial magic wand and get the whole world to agree with your command, what would be the biggest paradigm shift you would have parents make with regards to digital technology and with regards to other similar cultural influences today?
For me, it would be the issue is not unanswered questions.
Right.
Rather, the issue is unquestioned answers. What are the ideas and habits you hold to be true by default that you haven't held up against Scripture, that you haven't held up against rationality and said, how is this affecting my student? How is this affecting me? And I think the way that parents need to overcome that is by becoming bilingual, by being able to understand their students and understand the world around them.
Right.
And we had a quote from a student from one of the conferences we went to that says, hey, I think my parents know the struggles of being a teenager, but I don't think they fully understand the struggles of being a teenager in this generation.
That's true.
And when I heard that, I said, wow, that's really insightful for a 13-year-old girl to say.
Yeah.
And the follow-up to that is how are parents going to be bilingual? How are they going to understand, empathize with their students as students, but also strive to understand their language?
Awesome.
We've been talking today with John Wesolowski, the Director of Team Experience at AXIS, a Christian ministry that helps students and their families develop a lifelong faith. He's also the co-writer for The Culture Insider, a weekly list of the most important things to understand in our culture. You can find out more about his organization and about John as well at AXIS, A-X-I-S, AXIS.org. John, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to try to enlighten a couple of old guys.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We greatly appreciate it. And this is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential program for teens in crisis. If you think your teen could benefit from residential care, please contact us, and we will help you walk through that tough decision-making process. And if you'd like to reach out and help families with teens in crisis, please contact us as well. It takes a lot of ministry partners willing to come alongside us financially to provide the help that these families need. And your support in any amount can go a long way, whether it's a one-time gift or a monthly commitment. So thanks in advance from us, and please remember that your gifts are tax-deductible when you give securely online at licensedtoparent.org. Just click the donate button at licensedtoparent.org. For Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rosel. Thanks for listening today, and please make plans to join us again next week and once again renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.